This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 77 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we have Dating Safety with Scarlett Wild. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thank you, Max. We are here tonight. With me in the studio is the lovely Naked.
Nearly Naked.
Well, I don't call those with a fabric that you're wearing any more than floss.
Well, it is warm up here. You always make me warmer, so, yeah.
Well, I try to.
But you haven't told them even who I am yet.
Well,
if they haven't heard my shows before, they don't know who I am.
All right. We have in the studio as our co-host tonight, the lovely, the marvelous, the charming, educator, artist, author, Kate Kinsey.
Hello, everyone.
And our special guest, coming to us from the heart of the South, what else would you say about Atlanta?
I don't really count Atlanta as the South. Atlanta is its own creature.
Its own creature.
It has a distinctly Atlanta vibe.
Well, with us, though, is a lovely woman who I had the honor of meeting and the pleasure and the titillation, I might add, too, of meeting at FrolicCon a few months ago, Miss Scarlett Wild.
Hello, Bees. You're making me blush. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
You still blush?
I do sometimes, yeah.
Scarlett is...
That's why her name is Scarlett.
It is. How would you describe what you do, Scarlett? I'm trying to get a handle on it.
I'm trying to get a handle on it, too. The closest I'm coming to it these days is that I am a sex-positive adult sex educator, and I actually just put a video on YouTube about that, and there are really hysterical bloopers because I was very tired when I did the video, so definitely check that out. It's quite humorous, youtube.com/Scarlett Wild. And then I'm also a transformational coach. So although people may come to me initially about sex and romance issues, it may be that their sex and romance issues really have something going on in their career. So it's kind of like with coaching, whatever your specialty is kind of the entry point, and you kind of don't know where it will go from there. And I've actually been trained to do all types of coaching. So that's where I am right now, sex positive, sex educator, and transformational coach.
Okay, that's a few hats to wear.
And I want to point out for people who are going to go look for that blooper reel on YouTube, Scarlett spells her last name W-Y-L-D-E, not the way you would think, but a much more a creative, curly way of saying wild. I like it
Thank
that way.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you. And actually, Scarlett has a lot of different spellings as well. And
that's
so
true.
My whole name is S-C-A-R-L-E-T W-Y-L-D-E, and... You'll probably have a post, if somebody's listening to this off the website, there'll be links to my site.
Yeah, and we'll put one on our...
Our Hot Links page will have several ways to get in touch with you and several leads to all that you do. You have been in the sex business in various forms for most of your life, haven't you?
I started in the sex industry just shy of my 21st birthday, and I actively... worked in the sex industry for 16 years. And then in the last several years, I've just been focusing on my coaching. But yeah, I'll turn 40 this year. So yeah, about half my life, almost half my life was, well, if you count my career now as being part of the sex industry, which an argument can be made for it. I'm just not seeing clients in a touchy-feely, get them off kind of way anymore. But if you roll that all together, then yeah, half my life has been helping people with sex.
So you know much about the picadillos, quirks, fetishes, and the taboos, and the drama that goes around this sex and dating thing. that people go through. And I believe one of your classes is dating safety or safely dating.
Dating safely, it kind of, depending on where I'm doing the class, like I will be doing it at Dragon Con this year. It will be Saturday night at 10 p.m. If people aren't too drunk to show up, they can actually come and hear me do a full class and ask me questions there. And I don't know exactly what they're going to call it in the lineup yet for that. But essentially, it is about how to date safely. And that comes from my experience working in the sex industry, because essentially, working in the sex industry as an escort, I went on a whole lot of blind dates. Then my own personal experience dating and using, dating apps and stuff, I kind of applied what I learned in the sex industry. And I like to teach that to people so that they can be safe.
Now, this dating thing, the online is becoming a more and more popular way for people to make that initial connection, isn't it?
It is. There's not really a taboo around it anymore. In the beginning, a lot of people were ashamed to say that they were doing online dating, that they had a profile, or, even if they were successful, quote-unquote successful, and they met someone and they were in a long-term relationship or hadn't gotten married, they were reluctant to say that they met online. And I actually had a couple that I met, and they were funny. I said, how did you guys meet? And the guy didn't miss a beat. He said, at a strip club. And the funny thing was, the two of them looked very square. Like, they looked like neither of them had ever set foot in a strip club. And so my mind was, like, working on this. I'm like, now, how the hell did this happen? Like, how did these two people end up being in a strip club to begin with? And then, how did they end up being there at the same time, and how did they meet? And I was like, well, maybe she was just really wild when she was in college or something. And she slapped his arm. She said, we met on Match.com. He's always telling people crazy stories.
It's a lot less taboo now because you got the guy from eHarmony, who looks like everybody's uncle, a kindly uncle, encouraging people to sign up and find their soulmate. So,
the soulmate. Yes, the soulmate.
Don't get me started about soulmates.
Besides the apps, though, we have people meeting more and more with our social media world via friend of a friend that you are on one person's Facebook page, and then all of a sudden somebody else pops up with something that you find witty, and then next thing you know, you have a new friend.
I've made friends that way, not a date, but that's how my friend Samantha and I became friends, because she was somebody, a friend of mine's friend, and she posted a really clever comment about Books A Million being the turkey bacon of bookstores, and I thought that was really apt and funny, so... And now we brunch happily ever after.
Brunch happily ever after. But Samantha, you went to lunch with a gentleman friend of hers, wasn't he?
Yes, who turns out he knows half the people I know. I don't know how I'd never met him until now.
So this social thing is definitely a game changer, I guess. The bar scene just isn't what it used to be, is it?
Well, if you go to a bar, everybody's on their phone.
They're checking their social media.
That's everybody's fair. So busy checking in.
Taking a selfie so they can post it.
Exactly, to show how cool they are and how lonely they're not.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever seen the movie WALL-E, the animated film about the robot?
Yeah.
I love it. It's just such scathing cultural commentary that, in the future, nobody's talking to each other. Everybody's talking through their devices.
Yeah.
And you see that happening. You go to a bar or restaurant, and even if people are sitting together, they're still on their phone.
Well, even when I'm out to dinner, my partner occasionally loses himself to his electronic datas.
You're looking straight at me, and I'm the one that's guilty of that. But when I talked you into getting an iPhone...
Okay, now we're getting way off the subject.
But no,
we're supposed
I
to be
have
talking,
to do this.
We have to be talking to Scarlett about her advice on dating in the modern
world.
Okay,
you don't want the iPhone stories. Okay.
Well, it's really... It's not about us.
Okay.
Okay.
It's not. You're right. I'm being vindictive there. So, Scarlett, in this age, tell us about what are some of your strategies... First off, to actually meet people, connect with them in some way. What are some of your strategies?
I would like to kind of go back and kind of impress upon people why this information is important. Can we do that?
This is your show.
Well, it's your show, and I very much appreciate you having me on it. But I just want to kind of establish this, because a lot of people walk around kind of feeling safe in this world until something bad happens. And it's kind of like you don't really believe that it can happen to you until it happens. The reason that I'm an expert is because I have gone on all these blind dates, essentially. And for most of my career, I did work for agencies. And with agencies, you have someone who is keeping track of who you're with, where you are, and they're calling to check in on you. And so there were some safety things in place. And so some of what I learned was from that. But my most valuable lessons came from the times when shit went really wrong and the mistakes that I made or the failings I saw in the system that we had. The system wasn't quite, it needed to be tweaked so that it would be more safe. Fortunately, most of my career, you know, the people that I went to see, they just wanted to have a good time. And they were friendly, and they were great people, and I had some great conversations, had some orgasms, had a lot of fun in a lot of cases. But, you know, there's maybe about 10% of the population out there that are not interested in having a good time. They're interested in playing mind games and maybe doing emotional damage, but some of them maybe doing physical damage. Those people do exist.
Yeah.
They are a minority. The problem is they get around.
The ones that do it are really spreading the joy, right?
They're busy.
Yeah.
They're really busy. And, you know, for myriad and sundry reasons that we won't go into here, it takes a long time for people to come forward and for these people to be stopped. So, unfortunately, you know, they manage to hurt a lot of people before it ever gets stopped. Now, I'm saying all this not to scare the hell out of everybody. You know, everybody say, well, fuck that. I'm just going to stay on Tinder. I'm going to chat with people. It's going to be great. No, because really, those people are in the minority. And so what I'm passionate about doing is, you know, looking at the mistakes that I made and faulty processes and teaching people how they can avoid those mistakes. You know, they can be online or they can meet people in person, and they kind of know some warning signs. They know what to look for. They know how to present themselves. That's where I'm coming from.
It's amazing, the people that I've talked to occasionally that will send me email on my website will say some of the things that you're going, I can't believe you didn't realize you shouldn't do that, that you should not give somebody your home address right away, that you should not share your place of business. Or so some, it's good that you're putting this information out there just as a kind of reminder to some people to wake up and realize, think about what you're doing before you do it.
In hindsight, it all seems like complete common sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're like, well, shit.
We're not going to talk about the stupid things I've done, because no, I'm perfect. I've never done anything wrong.
I can definitely say I made some mistakes. And one of the scariest things that ever happened to me, I look back and there's all kinds of mistakes that I made, and not following my own advice and putting possible financial gain above my safety.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up in an abandoned house with a serial rapist.
That's terrible.
It was. It was the luckiest rape ever. And I say that because I was barely hurt. I was able to talk to guys wearing a condom. And fortunately, he did have a record, and the police were amazing.
Wow.
And so even though it was a terrifying experience, I was very, very lucky in the way that everything happened. But it was that night that I was like, huh, there really should be code words when I'm calling in so that they know when I'm saying I'm okay. That means no to the police. After that incident, it was like, in hindsight, everything that I've, you know, now tell people makes common sense. But until it happened to me, I thought I was safe.
I was completely joking when I said I never did anything wrong. I mean, because...
Oh, no, I know you are. You're being facetious.
I'm sitting here staring at one of the guys that I met offline that common sense would have told me not to go meet him, but... It turned out very well, but I was doing exactly the thing I tell newbies don't do.
The thing is, you've had some friends refer you to people that have turned really ugly, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mr. Texas was probably my worst.
Probably your worst one.
Yeah.
But in this kink community, doesn't it become a little more complicated for many people that are looking for a little bit more of the edge. So how do we manage it?
So I just wanted to kind of establish, you know, like, you can make dumb choices a lot of times and get away with it completely unscathed. The thing is, just because you got away with it once or 10 times doesn't mean that on that 11th you don't find yourself in an abandoned house with a serial rapist. You just need to be aware. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just trying to make people aware, okay? So that's why I'm so passionate about it, because if I had known all this stuff, you know, it was the luckiest rape ever, but I wouldn't have even had to go on through it if I had known this information prior. So I want to spare people those types of experiences. You're asking, like, if somebody's looking for a little more of an edge, like they're in the kink community.
Yeah.
Can I say I'm not ready to talk about that yet?
Yes. You went back and you established some of your reasons for wanting to educate people. And my question before that had been, how do we make connections and start this process of even meeting in real time?
I don't know. Scarlett, do you really cover that kind of thing? Or are you sort of education once somebody's found a partner and wants to learn about kindling romance and communication?
One of the distinctions that I make on myself is that I don't really call myself a relationship coach. Because the people that find me that say they want relationship coach, they really just want to whine and or find somebody to co-sign their bullshit.
Yeah.
And so I got to say, you know, I'm the person that helps you with the fun parts of the relationship. I help with, you know, the sex and romance.
I'm not the guy from eHarmony that's going to find your soulmate, right?
I do like helping people get ready for a relationship.
Right.
When you're deciding, okay, I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to date. One of the things I am really, really adamant about is that you be in a good place mentally and emotionally before you go date, before you go looking for sex partners. Because if you're off balance, your intuition is going to be off. You're going to be less likely to pay attention to things that could be warning signs.
And you're also probably more likely to make bad judgment because you're kind of desperate.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're coming from a place where you're just desperately lonely, or you've got terrible self-esteem and you feel like you'd be looking for someone to save you, God help you. That is dangerous, in my opinion.
You've got a neon sign over your head saying, somebody please take advantage of me.
Exactly. And so my first advice to people before they start any kind of dating, but also in regards to specifically staying safe, is make sure you're taking care of yourself and you're in a good place with yourself, because predators are attracted to people who are off balance.
That's excellent advice.
Thank you. But you're right. It's like a neon sign to them. You can meet people out in the world. That's fine. But if you're out in the world or you're online or, you know, anything, you want to make sure that you're coming off as a confident person.
Right.
Because that's just going to be a turnoff to these people who are looking to manipulate you, you know. And like I said, it might not always come to physical harm. Some people just want to play mind games. Who wants to go through all that? Unless it's an agreed upon mind game. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, there are some people who get off on that.
Absolutely.
And I think the negotiation part comes a little bit later in the relationship curve, doesn't it?
Part of being confident and being okay with yourself and in a good place with yourself is being really clear about what you want.
Yes.
And yeah. if you're really clear about what turns you on and what doesn't turn you on, what you might be interested in later but you're not interested in right now, those types of things, that helps you to come across as confident. And you definitely want to put that kind of stuff in your profile. And you want to be looking for that type of stuff in other people's profiles.
Also, if you've got all that figured out, you're not going to waste a lot of time with somebody who doesn't know either. You're both going to be on the same page because you've both figured out, hopefully, what you want. You're not going to waste time in a relationship or getting to know someone only to find out you're diametrically opposed.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, if you're just looking for a sexual relationship and you're not really looking to get emotionally involved with someone, then you can kind of cut it off there when you just know what you want. Well, even then, you need to kind of define, like, what does casual sex mean to you, or what does this having a strictly sexual relationship? You need to be, you know, what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
You need to be secure in that knowledge yourself, and you need to be able to explain it to another person And once again, you know if you're not on the same page. Now, when you start looking at actually getting into a romantic relationship with someone, then you need to start looking about compatibility, life goals, all that kind of stuff.
I was actually thinking much more superficially on that physical sex level of I am diametrically opposed to tickling, so I do not want to mess around with somebody who's into tickle teasing, because that's going to be a real big no for me.
Exactly.
And he would be really disappointed the first time he brought out the rope and the feathers, and I said,
Right. And so, you know, by knowing what it is that you're really looking for, you put that out there, and then, you know, if you're waiting for people to contact you, they're going to see, you know, what you're into, what you're not. If you're looking through other people's profiles, you know, you get to something, and it's like, for me, like, I absolutely love oral sex, giving and receiving. If someone is not into both giving and receiving oral sex, it's not going to work.
You know? Are there actually people who aren't into oral sex?
Yes, they are.
There are.
Okay, it's so foreign to my experience.
I have met quite a few women that they have not had pleasurable oral sex, or that's in their minds that they're...
It's dirty.
Many of them eventually come over to the other side, but guiding them across that line, that's something totally different than a dating relationship usually, because that gets into the mind games when you're trying to change somebody even before the first date.
Right.
One of the first warning signs that you can look at and say this is a problem is, you know, if you have in your profile, I hate tickling, and someone writes you and they're like, oh no, I'm going to make you like it.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
That's like the guys that will cruise around a gay bar looking to pick up the straight women who come just to have a good time. Or lesbian women. I've been approached by a guy saying, I can do you better than she can, so come on.
Have I missed a cruising spot?
It's a very strange niche. I don't think they have much success. I really don't.
Okay.
But I thought it was really weird that I could be hit on in a gay bar.
Well, I know that
by a supposedly straight man. I'm like, why are you here?
I can't blame them for thinking that it might be a good idea. That is a warning sign, you know. Yeah, I don't care how you met the person. You know, online, it's kind of, you've got your profile laid out, and they've got their profile laid out. And so it can be a little more direct. No matter what, you know, if you stated that you don't like something, you know, or you do like something, and they're trying to talk you out of it either way, that's a red flag. What I found in my experience is that predators, a lot of them, like the really smart ones, the professional predators, so to speak, are very methodical. And they'll try to push you just a little bit in a bunch of different places to see where you're going to give. And, you know, that whole saying, if you give an inch, they'll take a mile,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Another way is by being insulting. I had a client once that turned into a big problem that, you know, in the beginning he was like, well, you're not really what I was looking for. I said, okay, I'll leave. And he was like, oh, no, but I'll keep you anyway. That escalated to an assault, an attempted rape, and a night in jail and a total nightmare.
So you've had some bad experiences.
I really have had some bad experiences, and I put those out there not for people to feel sorry for me. I put that out there so that they know that I know where they're coming from if they've been through that.
Yeah.
I put it out there to show that, you know, even though I've had some bad and terrible experiences, I still love sex. And I still love men.
I thank you for being upfront and honest about it, because so many people, there are a lot of different areas in our lives that people tend to hide and treat as shameful. I know that I have bipolar disorder. And a lot of my friends are like, I wouldn't tell anybody that. And I'm like, no, the more I talk about it, the more other people know it's okay.
Right.
So if you've been victimized in some way, there are other victims out there who need to know that somebody's been through it. They dealt with it. They found the closure or whatever coping that they needed to move on.
And that's why I share stuff. It's not for shock value. It's not for pity. It's so that people can say, you know, hey, I've been through that too. But also, there's kind of a stereotype that if you've gone through any kind of sexual trauma, that like
you're going to be damaged.
You're going to be damaged. Like the best you can hope for is maybe to like not shrink away from men, but like you're never going to have good sex or you're never going to have a good relationship. Like the stereotype that I see a lot is like there's some healing, but there's not, you're never going to be healed.
Right.
And I like to put myself out there and say, no, you know, it's taken some work, but, you know, I still love men and I still love sex. But having these experiences with these predators, I believe the reason that the universe had me have these experiences is so that I can talk about them and spare other people from having these experiences.
Well, I think you're doing something very worthwhile, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, you know, to talk about it. So anytime anybody's pushing your boundaries or being insulting, you know, any kind of stuff, those are warning signs. At very least, that's not the type of person you want in your life. But at worst, they could be a real problem.
Are there any other just major warning signs for somebody not to take this connection they have to the next level, which would be a meeting of some sort? Is there any other warning signs that happen regularly in the online world?
The person needs to be respectful in their contact with you, and you want to look at their profile. Do they seem like they know what they want? Do their desires seem like they're in line with yours? Look at their pictures. You know, are they fucked up in every single picture? I've seen those.
You know, they got those crazy drunk eyes.
Every single picture.
Yeah,
well, it's just crazy, crazy drunk girls. You know, how is this person coming across? Are they coming across as someone who has respect for themselves? People who have a genuine respect for themselves generally respect other people.
Even if I were just purely looking for sex, when I'm on FetLife and I'm looking at profiles, if somebody can only talk about their sexual desires, if they don't have anything that indicates that they have a life outside of sex, I'm generally not going to be interested. I want to know that there's a real person there.
Right, and that could be, I don't know if that's so much of a warning sign as it is like a personal preference, but
right.
You know that about yourself,
yeah.
And now that's something you can use to filter. Another thing you can look at is people, I had people contact me on dating sites, and they would, you know, write me a note, and they would say, the pity that so many of these messages go unanswered, .. And it's a guilt trip.
Yeah.
You know, and this guilt, that's another manipulation.
Right.
You know, and they're looking for the people who are going to fall for that. And then they know, okay, this is someone that I can toy with, you know, so that can be a problem. And so as far as like when you're meeting, what I counsel people to do is do, you know, some email exchanges. I'm wary of doing too many message exchanges because there are people that are just, they just want to play games, and
yeah.
That's not interesting to me. And so for me, what I do is I would do, you know, 4 or 5 message exchanges, and then I would request a phone call, or even better, a FaceTime chat or Skype call, so that you can actually see that this person really is the person in their profile picture.
Yeah.
And the Skype call allows you to often put up kind of a blinder to your actual phone number, which even cell phone numbers are, for many people, their main line means of communication, and they don't want to abandon that cell phone number easily.
Just because Mr. Crazy got a hold of it.
Just because Mr. Crazy got a hold of it, or Miss Crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What I would do is I would tell guys, I would say, hey, I'm going to call you from a blocked number. You know, and there were guys that, no, you can't call me from a blocked number. And I don't know if that was a predatory thing or if it was just some particular hang up, but then I would say, well, you know, I'm sorry. That's the way that, you know, I do it to keep myself safe.
Right.
So, but having a phone conversation with someone, you know, you can hear, do they have like an angry edge to their voice? You know, are they respectful? Do they show up for the call on time? You know, these are just all things. It's like, are they showing you respect with their actions and their words and their deeds, essentially?
Right.
And then from having that conversation or Skype call, then you decide whether you want to meet them in person. And I always tell people, you know, meet in a public place first.
Absolutely.
And even though you're meeting in a public place, this is one of the biggest things. Have someone know where you're going,
right.
Who you're meeting, and how long you think you're going to be there.
You could be in Times Square, but if nobody knows you're there, it's not going to keep you safe.
Exactly. I mean, you could be walking to the door of the place and they've been stalking you in the parking lot and they grab you and throw you in a car and you're gone. You know, so just because you're meeting in public, unfortunately, doesn't necessarily mean you're safe.
Right.
one of my biggest things, and it's funny because I've seen sex workers that would grill the hell out of a potential client, and then they would go on an online date and disregard everything. And it's kind of like, money doesn't give people disease, people do. And money doesn't kill people, people kill people. So it doesn't matter, you know, if the person is paying you or not, still could be a safety concern. And so, you know, it's very important, even if you don't, you know, I would say try to get this person's real name, but also I would tell your safety buddy, hey, their handle is such and such. This is the app or site or where I met them or who I know them through, you know, those kinds of things, so that if something goes sideways, they know where to start looking.
Now, Scarlett, how do you balance the thing between discretion and getting real information? The ideal world is you get their information and they know nothing about you. But if they're being wise, they are also looking for this personal information about you to protect themselves. So
yeah,
where's this balance point at?
Because I know some submissives in the community that say, I'm not going to meet somebody unless he faxes me a copy of his driver's license. And I'm like, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't trust a copy of your driver's license to a stranger. Why should he?
Right, but if you don't even know if it's really their driver's license.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know? So I would say if they're being cautious as well, I do kind of take the girl position and kind of do the girl thing and say, you know, because as an escort, that's how it works. I don't show you my ID. You show me yours. And to the men out there, I know it's not really fair. I absolutely understand that.
Well, in the escort position, you need his credit card number, so you've got a valid reason for asking for that.
Well, not if they're doing cash.
That's true. Okay.
Cash preferred.
You could agree to exchange first names and then go meet and then, you know, decide from there. And for a first meeting, you know, somebody needs to know where you are, and you're looking for, does the person show up? Do they show up high or drunk? Do they show up disheveled? Do they seem agitated, or are they, you know, calm and just kind of happy to be there? Do they try to change the location at the last minute? Do they immediately start pressuring you to leave and go somewhere private? These are all potential red flags.
Mm-hmm.
That you're just kind of feeling them out.
Yeah.
And then as far as when you're meeting someone for, you know, for the first time and you are deciding to go somewhere private, you definitely need to let your safety buddy know before you leave that place, hey, I'm going somewhere different with this person. I'm going to this address. If you get to that address and it's a different address, that is a red flag.
Yeah.
You need to leave.
Yeah.
But you need to know before that you even leave that spot, you need to be on the phone with your safety buddy saying, hey, I'm going to this place.
Now, isn't one factor that's very important in having a safety buddy is you have to know your buddy is somebody that's going to follow through. They're not going to say, oh, she's
absolutely
probably okay, I don't want to overreact. It's got to be a firm agreement that if you don't call them back or whatever the agreement is, they're going to act on it.
Exactly. You want somebody that is trustworthy. You want somebody, you know, if your combat buddy is a friend that has 5 kids, that guy might work. Because kids can sow a lot of chaos in a short amount of time. And it may not be that they're an irresponsible person, but, you know, if their life can, you know, tends for the chaotic, that doesn't work. You need someone that that you know for sure is going to follow through, you know, with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get to a location, I would always be adamant, we have to be alone. If you've got roommates, they cannot be here.
Good point.
If anybody shows up to visit and you let them in, I'm gone.
Very good point.
And, you know, I would show up sometimes as an escort. And these guys, you know, would be traveling 2 or 3 to the room. And, you know, it was usually if it was just 2 of them. But, you know, one guy would be passed out drunk in the second bed.
Uh-huh.
Like, no, come on in. And they're like, he's asleep. He's not going to wake up. And I would say, you know, look, if he's just asleep, he can wake up. And that can be a problem.
Yeah.
The only way it would be safe for me to come in this room is if he was dead. But if he's dead, that's a whole different problem. So no, I'm not coming into the room.
Dead or in a straitjacket, that would work.
Right.
Yeah. Dead and it's not been reported, a red flag.
That is a red flag. And Now, I talk a lot about from the woman's perspective, obviously, because I am a woman, and I believe that we have equal rights, but I do not believe that women can overpower most men. We are in a little bit of a disadvantage, you know, in these situations, but what I tell men about this, you know, why it's important for men to listen to this information is because, you know, you meet up with a girl and you think she's hot stuff and, you know, she's a little bitty thing. There's no way she could ever overpower you. It doesn't mean that there's not some big hulking guy waiting at the apartment you're going to.
Or that she doesn't have drugs to slip in your drink or...
Exactly.
Or she's playing crazy or morning after regrets and...
Uh-huh.
There are just a host of things that go wrong for the guy.
Exactly.
The next morning, when her parents find out what she was doing that night, and they pressure her, there's all sorts of problems.
All of a sudden, you're in for statutory rape.
Well, all of a sudden, it's not statutory, it's plain rape or sexual assault, and even if you're found innocent, it's still a horrible
thing to go through, and it ruins your reputation, and yeah, I mean, these are all things. It's important for men to kind of know this information and kind of go by this stuff as well. When you get to the home, you know, you're looking, you know, are there people there? Is there a whole bunch of discarded alcohol bottles there? You know, that could be a problem. Is there drug paraphernalia there?
Yeah.
Are there weapons out and present?
Are they, I had this happen once, you walk in and their roommate is measuring out a large quantity of Coke on the kitchen table, and you're like, I think I'm going to leave.
To some people, that might be the sign of a great party to start. If that's your scene, that's great, but that goes back to kind of knowing yourself and knowing what you're comfortable with. Some people, you know, they can be one way in public, and you might give them private, and they might turn into a completely different person.
I've had that happen.
Scarlett, new question. Many of our people are looking to meet needs that aren't being met in their traditional relationships. And
sure.
And we could go down the path of that's wrong and so forth, but it still occurs.
Oh, no.
And how do these people that have partners, another life, how do they manage to present themselves? And how do you vet these people in a way that is reasonable to all parties? I mean, we have a lot of women that their needs aren't being met. Oh, we have a lot of men that their needs aren't being met. They're looking for something extra. We are talking about non-consensual, non-monogamy first. And then the consensual is a little more relaxed, of course. But the non-consensual, because you may run into a guy that says that he is looking, his marriage is ending, but it's not, and all that. So is that something to stay well away from, those type of situations, in your opinion?
Okay, so I had a little bit of a problem understanding, but I'm going to tell you what I think you're talking about.
Okay.
You're talking about someone that's in a relationship, and I think you said the marriage was ending, but it hasn't ended yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I tell people. You're looking at a world of drama if you get involved with someone who's in a relationship and the other party is not aware that this person is going outside of the relationship. Well, I don't really go into it being, you know, wrong, right? That's, you know, individual morality, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it could just be a world of drama. So I really don't, I counsel people to kind of steer clear of that kind of stuff, honestly. If you do go there, then I would just say, just be aware of all this same stuff as far as red flags and what have you. You know, I would be especially wary of someone who was in this non-consensual, non-monogamy thing, and they weren't being honest about the fact they were in another relationship. And I would understand why that person, you know, might not want to be upfront about the fact that, you know, oh, you know, I'm really married, but she doesn't know I'm doing this. But the problem is, like, if someone's lying about something, there's always a potential they're lying about more. And it's a yellow or a red flag, depending on your personal comfort level.
What other big warning signs would you tell somebody to look out for? What have we missed something that you would tell people to beware of?
If you get into a place and it's not well lit, sometimes that can be an intimidation tactic. Sometimes they're hiding, you know, something that they don't want you to see. That had that happen to me a few times, you know, that kind of thing. But I also wanted to touch on, so, you know, when you are looking for something that has a little more of an edge to it, they, you know, we're looking for someone who will hit you. That's part of your fun.
Yeah. I want the big bad wolf.
right, I want the big bad wolf. But the thing with, you know, a BDSM is that there are safety measures in place, you know, right? There's agreements that are made about, yes, I want you to hit me, but you can only hit me with this, this, and this, never with that. And, you know, here is my safe word and, you know, and all that stuff. And that, if you're going in to do, you know, BDSM play or a BDSM relationship, that definitely needs to be a part of your conversation, either in that phone call before you meet them or at that first meeting. Or, you know, maybe if you go your separate ways after the initial public meeting, you would need to have that conversation. You need to have that kind of conversation before you go into private. Everybody needs to be on the same page about what their expectations are for the private interaction.
The thing is, we say this, and I advise some confused people who find me all the time about, yes, you should have that conversation, the negotiation, but all too often, what actually happens in the real world is two people stumble into each other, and one of them picks up on something in the other person, and so they begin this sort of dance, this flirtation that, you know, so often with the emphasis on consent and negotiation, we kind of suck some of the magic out of BDSM.
Blah, 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 blah. I hate that shit.
I think it's a thing that confuses a lot of newbies because they're like, no, I talked to this guy and it's like, we didn't have an actual negotiation, but it was really sexy and it turned me on. And why can't I go, you know, meet him?
Well, you can. You just need to have a fuller conversation. And, you know, that goes into this whole concept of the one. And if you're really the perfect mate, if you're my soulmate, I don't need to spell all this out. It will just be perfect. And, oh God, gag me with a spoon.
I have to admit, I was there at one point. I thought it was the real thing, and it was destined in the stars.
But you're with me 13 years later.
Yeah, but it's not quite what my starry eyes thought it was going to be.
No, reality's different.
To me, there's two factors to that. You know, one, we have, it's a prevailing myth in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we're brought up on in Disney movies, romance novels, romantic comedies, you know, all this stuff. And then there's also what I call cocaine logic.
It feels good.
When we're in that infatuation stage, they've done studies and our brains are actually identical to someone on cocaine.
It was like that, yeah.
When you're on cocaine, you can't make good decisions. You're just like immersed in pleasure and
but it's so much fun. It's so wonderful.
Well, and the trick is to learn how to enjoy that without doing insane things.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, you know, if you're into BDSM and you're going to meet someone for the first time, one of the big things I tell people in any kind of thing, if you're meeting someone alone for the first time, I would limit that date or that interaction to maybe an hour and a half. Just long enough for you to have an experience, have a good experience, and get to know them a little better, but not so long that, I mean, stupid shit can happen, you know, from the jump, but limiting it that, and then going back home and letting your hormones settle down and letting your high come down a little bit and then looking back over the situation and deciding from there if you want to have more interactions with the person. But if you're doing, you know, if you're doing any kind of BDSM play, don't let someone you just met tie you up. I don't care how much you've talked to them on the computer or on the phone or, you know, blah, blah. No, don't let anyone put you in a cage, tie you up. Dole out, you know, it's like you don't want to spend all your excitement in the first meeting anyway. Kind of build up to the more extreme things as you learn to trust this person. If you're really kicking and screaming and saying, oh, that just takes all the hot out of it, I think you might need to see a psychiatrist because you might have a secret death wish, in my humble opinion.
There's many people that will advise, particularly since we've had so many play spaces open in the world, that if you're actually meeting for a play date, to make it at one of these play spaces, so you have witnesses. Is that really valid advice, in your opinion?
I think that that's a great idea. If you know that this is a safe play space and that their dungeon monitors are serious, then I think that that's a good compromise. I would say don't go in a private room with this person if you're planning on, you know, getting tied up or something. But if you're going to do like maybe a public scene and be tied up in a place, and you might even go to the dungeon monitor and say, hey, I'm meeting a new playmate here tonight. I met this person and I don't know a lot about them. Can you just keep an extra eye out for me? And I'm sure people in the community would be more than happy to do that and do it, you know, unobtrusively.
We have covered a lot. We have not covered one thing. How do we make the final transition? We've done play, but we haven't made the final transition to sex. Is there any special warnings? The ultimate relationship move for most people, which is taking it into the sexual realm. Is there things that that they need to be particularly aware of? I mean, a lot of people don't know how to choose a sex partner wisely, in my opinion.
That's very true. And it comes back to know yourself, be in a good, solid place with yourself, know what you want, and be willing to communicate it. And there's an art to communicating, too, which is one of the big things I work on. The free gift that I want to offer listeners, if they opt into my mailing list, and you can opt out at any time, but I don't share anybody's email address, and I don't fill their boxes up with crap. But if you opt into my email list, you will get a preview guide. Well, I'm trying to settle on a name. It will either be Radical Romance or Your Ideal Romance. Still working that out. But I designed this workbook that helps you to get really super clear about who it is that you are, how to take care of yourself, how to ask other people to help take care of you, looking exactly what you want from a relationship, from your sex life, and in a partner. That's over 100 pages. The free gift is going to be about 5 pages long. So it's going to be kind of a preview. Yeah. It will help people start thinking in this way. And if you have this kind of foundation, dating becomes a lot more simple because you know what you want and you can look at someone and say, you know what, you're a great person. You're a fantastic person. You're not for me, you know. Or they can recognize, you know what, you're a great person and you are exactly what I'm looking for. And I think it's really important to consider sex because my last serious relationship, I loved this man. And you know, there were so many great things about the relationship. There were some things that were not so great as well. Ultimately, it did need to end. But at the time, I just loved him so much. But sexually, we were not compatible at all. And a lot of people discount that, and then they end up in marriages where they're not getting their needs met, and then we get into the non-consensual, non-monogamy mess and drama.
There are people that I've known since college, a couple of guys I've stayed in contact with, and they were very sexual then when we knew each other, and then they went off and they got married, and now they're like, oh, my wife is, we're just, our sex life is, she's not interested, I like this, she doesn't. I'm like, how did you end up with this person? I don't know how that happens, but it happens with a lot of people. They end up with somebody who ultimately, sex is not as important to the other person, or the right kind of sex is not as...
Because we're not taught to value it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about so many other things are more important than just the sex. But the sex is pretty serious. It's a basic human drive that if you're not getting it, you're going to be pissed off in a lot of ways.
Exactly. And one of my big things that I try to explain to people is love is beautiful and love is great, but love is not enough. Okay? There are so many people in this world that we could fall in love with. There's fewer people in this world, but still a bunch. This is me combating the myth of the one. There's fewer people in this world that we're truly compatible with as far as our life goals, our relationship goals, and our sexual desires. But there's a plethora of those. And the trick is you want to find the person that you're most compatible with that you can also love.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of them out there. We just have to be open to that and know what we're looking for. You know, and not be trusting to, when I meet this one, everything is going to fall into place. You know, because that's cocaine logic.
And so often, you know, we are, you're absolutely right when you said we're brainwashed by culture and society to, you know, it's going to take another person to make our life perfect. And you just can't think that way without setting yourself up for disappointment.
Well, and it's not fair to the other person either.
No, it's not.
It's not. And I love romance. I love romantic movies. I love romantic books. I read almost exclusively romance novels. And that's great. But it's entertainment. It's not real life.
We've had a really great conversation here. I'm trying to think of any parting thoughts. I do want to say I heartily advise people to go out to your website, Scarlet Wild. And you've got a really neat thing on here that you do wine and naughty knowledge parties.
Yes.
I think that sounds fabulous. Basically, people set up with you. They invite people, and how would you capsulize this? It says something about you will send them questionnaires to find out what the guests want to talk about or want to know about.
Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you, this Sunday, which I know this is going to air, you know, later, but in Scarlett's real time right now, this Sunday I have a class, and it's called How to Blow His Mind Without Gagging, Swallowing, or Taking a Cum Shot to the Face. Uh-huh. And it's not that there's anything wrong with those things, but I think a lot of women don't give head because they think they have to do it like they do it in porn. And they're not turned on by the way that they see it in porn, and so they just refuse to do it.
Yeah, porn has gotten to be like Olympic-style endurance and training and...
Porn actresses are highly tuned athletic machines.
Yes, Belladonna can, Belladonna can be extremely intimidating to the average woman going, I can't do that. I can't take two 12-inch penises in metronome... timed, alternating.
Where does she put them at?
I don't know, but we've both seen her do it, and that's, anyway, we're getting off subject.
I love the way you put that. They really are trained for it. You know, what we don't see with porn, I tell people, porn or erotica is great, but the problem is people think that it's real, and so then they're upset with their bodies because their bodies don't look that way, they don't perform that way. They're upset with their partner because their partner doesn't perform that way. And, you know, people need to get into their heads. Porn and erotica, whether it's written, visual, whatever, is not education. It's fantasy. And you use it as fantasy. But don't go comparing yourself to that and finding yourself lacking, because you will. And then you feel like shit. And it's just, so use porn for what it is. You know, let it inspire the fantasies, but don't think that that's the only way to do things, or that's how you have to do things, or that even that's the most pleasurable. Because porn, especially visual porn, is all about visual. So with this class, so what I did is I sent out an anonymous survey to the women that are coming. So I have the topic, and I know, you know, basically what I'm going to teach, but then I let them ask questions and kind of tell me things discreetly so that I can customize the class to them. And then I'm going to present the class, I'm going to present the material, I'm going to answer any questions that they ask me anonymously. Then they have the chance to ask me questions at the class. And then you get a free 30-minute follow-up phone call, private phone call with me, to ask any questions that you were either too shy to ask or forgot to ask while you were there.
I think that's a fabulous idea. Sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I use a lot of humor. You know, I show some YouTube videos that present the topic in a humorous way, get people laughing. They've got a couple of sips of wine. And it turns into, you know, a fun thing. It's kind of similar to the sex toy parties, only I'm not selling anything. You know, there's no pressure. And those are a lot of fun. I'm really excited about launching that. And they can be female only, male only. They can be co-ed. It's whatever you and your friends are most comfortable with.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Kate and I are looking at each other with mischievous thoughts, I think.
Well, I don't know. We know so many people with strange... We're hardly the typical demographic.
No, we're not typical.
As long as you're authentic, that's what I love, genuine and authentic. If you're a weirdo and that's really who you are, that's who I am, and I embrace it. The people out there just trying to be weird for the sake of weird, that's another story.
Scarlett, I want to thank you for coming to us today. This has been a great conversation. And I suspect we'll be back because you have other areas of knowledge, and we'll be hoping to share those with our listeners in the future.
I would love that. It was great meeting you at Frolicon. I was so honored that you came and asked me to be a part of this. Kate, it was wonderful talking to you.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Yeah, I would love to meet in person sometime. And thank you to all your listeners. You know, visit my website, get on my mailing list. I'll send you the free guide. And you can also do a free 30-minute coaching consultation. Help figure out where things can be better for you in your sex and romance. I'd be happy to do that for you.
And we've had Scarlett Wild with us today and Kate Kinsey. So listeners, go to our Hot Links page. And check out the information on
And I'm
going to
put in a shameless plug since I haven't been here for a while. Amazon.com. Look for Kate Kinsey, How to Be a Healthy and Happy Submissive. That's my newest book. And it's been getting some really nice reviews. People have said it's been a lifesaver for them. So I'm glad about that.
Well, it is a good
but I have
how-to.
But I have a cat to feed, so, you know, buy some books, people.
Scarlett, thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you, y'all, as well.
You have been listening to episode 77 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we have the Southeast Leatherfest wrap-up.